today we're discussing Highclere Castle, but in the broader context of sort of, we know Highclere Castle today as the home of Downton Abbey, probably the most famous country house, would you agree, maybe? And Jacobean. I wanted to ask straight off the bat, actually, everyone knows what Highclere Castle looks like, but it might be helpful to dig into Jacobean, what makes it Jacobean. My understanding of Jacobean is that Gothic revivalist was very popular in Elizabethan times. Moving into Jacobean times, they were kind of bored about it slightly and wanted to go back to Italian Renaissance, but also not just Italian Renaissance, but adding some medieval things in there or Tudor things in there. I wonder if you could take us through, like, when we're looking at Highclere Castle, how do we know that it is Jacobean? What actually makes it Jacobean?
Connor, I think this is your area as an architect, as a classical architect. I think you can explain what Jacobean architecture is.
Well, I would say Highclere itself, at its core, is an abbey. It, in the sense that it has older bones than what you see, and around that there was a Georgian house. So you had sash windows, regular size, tall openings, and symmetry and order, and that you'd expect of a Georgian house. So this Jacobean style of the 19th century was Charles Barry, of course. And when people are thinking of the details, think of Westminster Abbey. So you have finials along the roofline. You have turrets in the corners, so it gives a sense of a castle, but not in a fortress military sense, in a picturesque and from the aesthetic viewpoint. The surface is textured, but not with stone and roughness, but rather with changes of levels where you might, what it's called, strap work. And with stone, there are bandings beneath the windows, creating horizontal, and then you have in between the windows creating vertical emphasis, and the interplay between this vertical horizontal change of levels along the facade lead to the most beautiful view when the sunlight casts over the facade over the course of the day. Of course, Downton Abbey, which it's known for, but Highclere Castle is crowned by a tower, and this often is used in the now film and then show as a focal point where the camera will spin around this tower, and the house itself becomes a character of the show. Like many country houses that feature in films, they themselves are characters, and they lend their beauty, their unique architectural aesthetic lends itself to that. But Jeff, just thinking along those lines of, I'm just talking about the aesthetic of the house, but Downton Abbey, how did it come to look this way? Why did the family, make it Jacobean? It was a Georgian house. It was quite plain and restrained, austere perhaps. But why do you think they made it Jacobean in the 19th century?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thanks, Connor. I mean, I'm a generalist in the sense that I know a little bit about lots of different country houses. So I'm not an expert by any means. And we should get Lady Carnarvon on or someone like that in due course to do an episode just on Highclere and on the history and what it's like to live in the real life Downton. And to pick our brains, because of course Highclere's got a phenomenal history. The Carnarvons were involved in the excavation of Tutankhamun's tomb. I think they bankrolled it actually. So they've got an Egyptian permanent exhibit at Highclere. So there's so much to talk about with Highclere itself, and obviously this episode is a broader episode that we're talking about film locations, and we'll get onto other locations in due course, maybe on this episode and the next. But for the time being, I mean, Highclere, you're absolutely right. It was an abbey, and that you referred to that. It was actually, I think, it was an estate of the Bishops of Winchester, which of course is not too far from Highclere, and it was a victim of the dissolution of the monasteries. So in 1551, during the English Reformation, Edward VI, Henry VIII's son, confiscated the property from the Church of England and granted it to the Fitzwilliam family. And we've talked about the Fitzwilliam family already with regards to Wentworth Woodhouse. So it was actually one of their estates initially when it was granted to a private family from the church. And then it was later, it was rebuilt as Place House and then later rebuilt again. It was acquired by the Herbert family of Wilton. And we can talk about Wilton in due course because Wilton House in Wiltshire is also a remarkable house that's used in many films. But it was the Earls of Pembroke, the Herbert family, who were granted it. And the eighth Earl of Pembroke's second son, Robert Herbert, inherited Highclere. And his heir was later raised to the peerage as Baron Porchester and later Earl Carnarvon. So that's why there are these two branches to the Herbert family. There's the Herberts at Wilton and the Herberts at Highclere. And the Herberts at Highclere are in remainder to the title at Wilton. So that means that they could hypothetically inherit the title from the Earls of Pembroke if for some reason their line died out. So it's a family with two great estates. And Highclere was really, I mean, it was, I guess, before Charles Barry got his hands on it, it was a really pretty house. It wasn't as grand as Highclere is now, but it was seen as a very pretty house. And William Cobbett, who was a sort of writer and an early journalist and a politician in the 18th century, he remarked of Highclere, "I like this place better than Fonthill, Blenheim, Stowe, or any other gentleman's grounds that I've seen. The house I did not care about, although it appears to be large enough to hold half a village. The trees are very good, and the woods would be handsomer if the larches and firs were burnt, for which they are only fit. The great beauty of the place is the lofty downs, as steep in some places as the roof of a house, with a form of boundary that in the form of a part of a crescent." So he's talking about the setting, and Highclere really has got an extraordinary setting on the Berkshire, Hampshire Downs. And architecturally, it was at that point when their description was written, it was just a square classical mansion, very much of the sort of Georgian Palladian period. And then it was remodeled for the third Earl and encased in the Jacobean Bath stone. So having been a sort of Greek revival house before, it was encased in the in this Jacobean style by Charles Barry, who, of course, famously built the Houses of Parliament. And it's really a mix of Tudor, Elizabethan and Jacobean styles all built in the 19th century, with Renaissance elements as well. So it is extraordinary. But Connor, you talked a bit about it. I don't know what exactly would have driven the Carnarvons to remodel Highclere, except that it was fashionable at the time. I think that's the only thing I can think of. You know, Victorian era was, as we've talked about in previous episodes, the peak of the country house. It was the period when country houses were being either extended or knocked down and rebuilt in more fashionable Victorian styles. It was the height of the British Empire. Money was stoshing around Britain. A lot of landowners had vast estates, not only in this country, but abroad as well. And it was a time when they were able, and domestic staff were easy to recruit and cheap to house. So it was possible to have an enormous house like Downton. And of course you see that in the TV show. So when we start off with Downton in 1912, it's sort of Edwardian period, when the country house really was at its peak. They'd just got electricity in, the motor car had been invented, sort of the dawn of the modern age. But it was pre-World War One, so the death duties, the loss of a lot of heirs in the trenches, all sorts of things hadn't happened yet. And you'll remember, or listeners will remember, in the first episode of Downton, the heir to Downton died on the Titanic, and that sort of triggers the sort of debate around who's going to inherit. And they found out that Matthew Crawley was going to inherit, and he was a provincial middle class lawyer from I think Grantham or Ripon or somewhere like that. And what's interesting about Highclere is, of course, it's fictionally, as Downton Abbey, it's based in Yorkshire, and the Earl of Grantham is the chap who Hugh Bonneville plays, sort of the owner of the estate, and you would expect an estate of Highclere's size and scale and beauty to be in a bigger county like Yorkshire, which has got a plethora of large country houses. And what's unusual with Highclere is it's actually in Hampshire, which is much closer to London, much more developed, and it's quite unusual therefore to have such a large estate like Highclere in such a prime county, and that actually adds to its appeal subsequently, of course, because it's much more easily accessible for tourists. Connor, what are your thoughts?
Well, Jeff, just in what you were saying there reminded me of a scene from Downton Abbey in one of the early seasons when Lord Grantham had taken the new heir, Matthew, up onto the hillside, looking back at Downton Abbey. And he said, "You see 1,000 pipes that may burst, a roof that might leak." And then Matthew said, "Don't you?" And he said, "I see my life's work." And it showed he was building the ethos in Matthew, the heir to the estate, that this is something we've inherited and we have a duty to look after it and pass it on in the same condition or better than we received it. And over the course of a few episodes, you see they are sort of teaching Matthew this, or rather Lord Grantham is. And there was another scene, in fact, when Matthew didn't want the service of the butler and he didn't want the valet. But Lord Grantham was saying that we all have a role to play and we all must be allowed to play those roles. So talking about the fact that the estate is not just the family, but it is the village and all the other families together, and how everyone has a role to play in the running and the maintenance of the estate for future generations. But what is fascinating about the show, and I think one of the reasons it built a great audience, not only for the actors and the great script by Julian Fellowes, but the architecture, the landscape, the beauty of it, the aesthetic, it lends itself very well to screen. And you can see in many scenes that they have placed the camera in positions that Charles Barry himself would have placed them, whether it be an enfilade. So this is when, rather than having a corridor connecting rooms, you have all the doors aligned. And when they're all opened, you have this visual corridor connecting them all, door after door. But when they're closed, of course, you have a contained room. And there are scenes when the camera is set up in that position, and it's magnificent on screen, but also in the landscape, you have the Follies, and they create eye catchers on the screen. So whether they're placed in the center point, or rather the camera will, to show the passing of the seasons, it will show a fixed object. So the Folly on the hillside. And in fact, I believe in the success of Downton Abbey, another great aspect of filming on estates is it is a source of income to look after the house, look after the grounds and whatever needs doing. And one thing I know that Carnarvon's looked after was the Follies on the estate. So the temples and the faux ruins were repaired and restored thanks to the income from having the film crew on site. But thinking of Downton Abbey, Julian Fellowes, it does open us to talk about perhaps Gosford Park, which is another Julian Fellowes film in 2001 at Rootham Park in Hertfordshire. And similar to Downton Abbey, to Highclere Castle, the upstairs, downstairs were filmed in different locations. And that's because in the 20th century, as a lot of estates are, of course, asset rich and cash poor, having staff was an expense when you think of death duties, the punitive taxation and dwindling incomes from agriculture, that having staff was near impossible in many cases, that the downstairs for Downton Abbey was recreated in West London, in Ealing, in a studio. And of course, when they go up the stairs, they arrive back in Highclere. This, of course, meant that you had actors who were below stairs, and they would rarely be on site at Highclere to mix with their colleagues who were doing the upstairs scenes. And that led to quite interesting conversations I saw behind the scenes. But yes, Gosford Park was, I thought, another interesting house, interesting film.
Yeah, Gosford, for those listeners don't know, Gosford Park was a wonderful Julian Fellowes film. I think he actually won an Oscar for it, if I remember correctly, because it's a sort of satirical black comedy, murder mystery. But Rootham Park, which for our listeners is spelled Rotham, it's spelled Wrotham, which is the home of the Bing family, and still is used a lot in films, because it's actually the largest, or one of the largest, private estates within the M25. So it's very close to London. For listeners who aren't in the UK, the M25 is the ring road that surrounds London, and it's largely been urbanized and developed. So to have an estate, a proper estate, with a principal house within the M25, I think it's 2,500 acres, is very rare these days. So it's very popular in films. It's a Neo-Palladian house, sort of very much how you imagine a sort of Jane Austen-esque stately home to be. And it's used, I think, in over 60 films and TV shows. So it's in everything from Jane Eyre and Bridget Jones's Diary and Inspector Morse to Jeeves and Worcester. It was the main character really in Gosford Park. It's also used as in the Kingsman films, for our listeners out there who like the Kingsman sort of spy films that have come out in recent years. It was used as their sort of base in the country. It's a really pretty house, with sort of Palladian, with a pediment and columns, a sort of protruding pediment and columns, flanking wings. And it's got really sort of sumptuous interiors as well. It's a testament. It was one of the first houses that really tapped into the lucrative world of film locations. And Highclere, famously, going back to Highclere, was really struggling before Downton was filmed there. No one really knew about Highclere. It wasn't a big tourist destination. It probably opened for maybe a few weeks a year, and a handful of people used to visit. And then Downton's popularity meant that not only did the Carnarvons get a significant income from the filming, but they also then got the tourists, and they do all sorts of events there now, and it's incredibly popular, and it's really making a good income now, which is a real testament to how country houses have had to diversify. I think Lady Carnarvon said on record that they still only have a couple of members of full-time staff, maybe a butler and a housekeeper or something. I'm not entirely sure. I can't remember. But you know, they even now, with all that income, they still don't have a full team of... They don't have footmen and stable boys and chauffeurs and housemaids and all that sort of stuff. Even now, they just have a handful of staff. So it's interesting that despite diversifying very successfully... Highclere is still not what it was at its peak in the early 20th century. So I guess we could talk more widely about the importance that, you know, a lot of houses that there are scouts for film companies who look for these locations, and they're always looking for new houses that haven't been featured before. Obviously, convenience is an important thing. So a place like, I mean, Highclere is now so iconically Downton. It'll be interesting. It'll be really interesting to see if Highclere is featured again in another film or another TV show, because it's a bit like Castle Howard is so iconically Brideshead, both in the original TV show, ITV TV show, and in the film more recently. Castle Howard's exterior has been very rarely used in other shows because it's so iconic as being... I think it was used in Bridgerton, but it's you know... There's a danger, I guess, with using houses as a film location, that if you become too recognized as one particular location, it won't have the same impact if it's used in something else, because people will see it and they'll know straight away it's a film. They won't get as absorbed into the film. If you are so familiar with Downton as Highclere as Downton, if you see it in a Poirot episode, you might think, well, you know, you might not get as absorbed into the film. So it's you know, and I can think just before I pass back to Ben, you know, Saltburn is obviously very much a in the news at the moment. Emerald Fennell's new film, which is sort of a psycho thriller, starts off a bit Brideshead-esque and then takes a dark turn. But Saltburn's filmed at Drayton in Northamptonshire or Leicestershire. It's sort of on the border of Northamptonshire and Rutland and Leicestershire. But Drayton has never been used in any film before, so it's a totally new location. And that's, I suspect, one of the reasons why it's had such an impact, apart from obviously the brilliant screenplay and the great acting. So it's a challenge. I mean, we're lucky we still have so many country houses. There are many that don't need to be used as locations because the families have sufficient income. They didn't open it to the public. There are many that have tried to be featured but haven't been. So it's a challenge to know where and how to diversify. But Ben, what are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, you're right there, Jeff. You could, because on the one hand, you can't help but feel it to be serendipitous in a way. And on the other hand, it's like, well, how much of a curse it is it? You Google Highclere Castle now, or you Google history of Highclere, and you get several Google search pages of 30 facts that all Downton Abbey fans need to know. And, you know, all of these clickbaity things about Downton. Whereas on the other hand, you know, serendipitous, because as you say, it was in need of a lot of repair. I think even recently, 2009, like 50 of the rooms were completely uninhabitable and you could only actually use the ground floor and first floor for water damage. And then Downton Abbey comes along and completely solves that, brings it international fame and acclaim. So you look at both sides of the coin, and really even more serendipitous because on the one hand, echoing the sentiments you talked about earlier, Connor, Lady Carnarvon has said, this is a family home. Why on earth would we go to so much effort to preserve a museum? Was her quote, which I think is really powerful. And on the other hand, you can't really overstate the historical significance of the place. It's you talk, Jeff, about the Egyptian adventures of the fifth Earl, you know, to be the first man along with, what was his name, Howard Carter, to enter Tutankhamun's tomb. I mean, wow. And as well as that, that house and the family were instrumental in the foundation of Canada, another huge thing. All throughout time, there seemed to be these dots where Highclere Castle has been historically significant. It housed evacuees. It was a hospital in World War I, and no one really knew about it. So, yeah, bringing Downton to it, certainly serendipitous, but also it is now Downton Abbey. It isn't all those previous things as much. Has that happened with any other houses that you can think of to such an extent?
I think only, I mean, really, I can think of two houses, really, and that is, of course, like I mentioned, Castle Howard, which was Brideshead, which the original series of Brideshead was released around the time that country houses' fortunes started to turn in their favour again. So it was an incredibly popular TV show in the 80s that really put Castle Howard on the map again. And that's a John Vanbrugh English Baroque house in Yorkshire. So Castle Howard, I think, will perpetually be known, certainly to country house fans and period drama fans, as Brideshead. It was, like I said, used in Bridgerton. And certainly I didn't particularly enjoy or watch much of Bridgerton, but as soon as Castle Howard appeared on the screen, I lost focus because suddenly whatever I was absorbed in, I thought, you know, that's the bed that Lord Marchmain died in Brideshead. And you see it again in Bridgerton and you think this is, you know, it's just a film. And I think the other one is probably Chatsworth or Lyme Park, both of which were used as Pemberley. Lyme Park in the original Colin Firth adaptation of Pride and Prejudice, and then Chatsworth in the Keira Knightley version. But in both cases, those enormous Palladian houses have become iconic as being Chatsworth. Those are the only houses I can really think of. I mean, Connor, can you think of any other country houses that have really become so iconic with one particular show?
Become iconic, I know, not in that way, but thinking about why the houses are chosen, like what is the desire that these houses, their interiors, exteriors, they lend such an authenticity to the screen. And you'll often hear actors say, it was very easy to play the role of whoever it might be in a period drama in these settings. And more recently with The Crown, there is a room in Wilton House, which is perhaps one of the most beautiful rooms in England. And that is the Double Cube, which was built, the present house, of course, built around 1540s. But this room was by Inigo Jones and John Webb in 1653. And it's a beautiful 60 foot by 30 by 30 foot size room, adorned with Van Dyck paintings depicting the fourth Earl of Pembroke and his family. And it's one of the first Neo-Palladian rooms in England, but it's aesthetic. It's gilt trimmings on the mouldings. It was used in Pride and Prejudice when they were playing the piano and she was sneaking a peek from the door. This is in the more recent 2005 adaptation, but it was also used in The Crown in many scenes. And what's interesting about The Crown, for example, is you will see various houses used throughout one scene. For example, Buckingham Palace, they will enter the palace through a set, and you know it's a set. This is an interesting thing compared to the real thing. With the columns, you won't see entices. That's where the columns sort of, come inwards near the top. And there's architectural details that are wrong on a set that are, of course, correct in the real thing. And going into Buckingham Palace, they enter into the entrance hall of the stair hall of Lancaster House in London. And magnificent columned hall, double height space with plaster work and marble. And they rise the stairs into what is the Double Cube in Wilton. And here's a transition from set to London to Wiltshire countryside, all in the space of 10 seconds of screen time. But it's interesting how a townhouse in London, Lancaster House, lends itself to seamlessly blend into Wilton in the countryside. And thinking of that also, back to Gosford Park, where the upstairs is Sion House, and that's in West London, and Rootham Park was the downstairs, and that's the main feature of the show. But what a screen, a director, what the film crew could never can create an interior, but to create the fireplaces, the tapestry of colors in the palette within a country house, it's so difficult to create. But here you have essentially a stage set which is at the ready for these kind of shows. And I do think that going into the future, country houses will continue to be the focus of films and TV adaptations.